one day I'll get to kiss a man who has a beard, and I can't wait for that experience. And then to actually have it happen was, it was just thrilling.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So, picture it. It is a night sometime in 2012. You have just met up with a guy from one of the apps. It's Grindr or Growler or something. He takes you to dinner, and then he takes you to a bar. And then in that bar, you have your very first kiss. Like the proper first kiss anyway, not like some high school smoochy behind the bike sheds. So how does that feel? Are you intoxicated? Do you want more? Well, we're going to find out all about that experience from writer, director, and filmmaker Corey Sherman, who got a little smoochy at the Lost LA Space Fault Line way back in 2012. Can't believe I just said way back in 2012. 2012 was like 6 months ago, right? But putting aside the fact that I suddenly feel very old, I'm telling you all of this because that is where this week's episode starts, finding out about how that first kiss felt. So, why don't I stop talking and why don't we just get into it? So, if I were to ask you to describe your first kiss in 5 words, what would those 5 words be? I will also accept sounds that, like,
his beard felt really nice.
Okay, I've counted that up. That is 5 words. Well done.
Thank you.
You passed the test. Okay, so let me understand this beard then. How long was it?
It was pretty, it wasn't a super long beard. It was like pretty clean cut. But since it was my first kiss, it was my first kiss with another guy. And it was the first time I ever felt like another beard against my own face.
So it wasn't your first kiss then?
No, it wasn't my very first kiss. I had kissed a few girls in the year prior to that.
And then you were just like, nah, this isn't for me.
Yeah, I think I definitely knew that my heart lied with men. And so I went more in that direction.
Okay. And so the very notable difference was that he had more facial hair than they did.
That was huge. I mean, it was something like I've always been attracted to bears, bigger guys, hairy guys. And so ever since I knew that I was interested in that, that was always something that I would imagine. I'd be like, oh my God, like one day I'll get to kiss a man who has a beard and I can't wait for that experience. And then to actually have it happen was, it was just thrilling.
Okay. So there's a few things I need to pick up on here.
Yeah.
So when was the first time you realized that you were attracted to men?
That was like around sixth grade or seventh grade.
So that's like 11, 12?
Exactly. Yeah, cool. I just started to like notice that I was like looking at men more when I was at the beach or whatever, at the pool. And I couldn't write it off anymore as just like a weird fluke or like I was having, you know, just like this is just like a passing interest. I was like, oh, okay, this is actually developing into something. And it, of course, scared me at first. But over time, it was something that I leaned into more and embraced, especially by the time I was in college.
Okay. And then so how did these female kissing people come into the equation?
They were lovely ladies. Like some were, you know, genuine friends of mine in high school. It's not that I wasn't attracted to them. I totally was. I wasn't kissing them out of a total feeling of obligation. But at that time in my life, I was definitely trying to meet guys or start a relationship with a guy that I was interested in. And then it would just turn out that he was straight or whatever, closeted or just unavailable in some way. And so I felt like I was just hitting dead ends with that. And then by the end of high school, because, you know, like I said, like there was part of me that was definitely attracted to some women and to this day still is. And because I already had those friendships and relationships with those girls and we were already close in one way, I think just like in the, you know, in the craziness of high school senior year, one thing led to another, but it was always pretty chaste. It was always just kissing at a party.
So not like full on tongues.
Sure. That was part of it. Oh, okay. But I would say that's as far as it went.
So let's jump back then. This, when you were in the sixth grade, when you were like 11, 12 years old, and you were piecing all the bits together and reconciling the fact that it wasn't just a passing fancy and maybe you were attracted to men's, did you know what gay was?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I understood what it was to be, you know, attracted to someone of the same sex. There were a couple of people, you know, like some parents, friends of mine who were gay and were out and, you know, we would have dinner with them. So it was totally normalized. You know, I was living in New York City from a, you know, a liberal progressive family. So like I totally was familiar with the idea and some people, but that didn't make it, I think because of how much homophobia had been drilled into me from such an early age, just from growing up in that time in the, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s. And that stuff just has a way of really becoming part of your consciousness and your self-image. And so that's what made it feel a lot more genuinely confusing and scary when those thoughts first started to come in.
And how long did you sit with that?
I think it was really like a couple of years of really processing it. And of course, like spending some time pushing it away or maybe being like, okay, this is just a phase. I'll indulge this for like a year, but then it'll go away. And so much of it in my mind was, funnily enough, just like focused on like a future image of being married with like a wife and children and being like, well, I have to end up in that situation because that's the only normal life that I can imagine for myself. But then I do remember there was like a real turning point where I pictured myself being married to another man. And for some reason, in one moment, I was like, oh, okay, I could see that. I could see being happy with that. That's something I would be okay with. And that was like a real turning point where I was like, okay, all right, I'm gay. Like there's just, you know, I'm not resisting it anymore. And actually there was like a real feeling of relief and peace to that because I just knew that I didn't have to keep suppressing it, you know? And then it was sort of from that moment onward, I was like, okay, now really the next step is telling other people. But that took, you know, continued to take years.
Yeah, yeah. But so fascinating that you pictured yourself married.
I think it was just like wanting to feel like I was on a path towards a life that I could conceive of as being happy and normal. And that was the only one that I knew. I mean, I grew up with, you know, my parents are straight. I was almost entirely just surrounded by straight people and straight families. And that was all I was really seeing in movies and TV. And so that was the only image that I had to strive towards, even though I was never, and still I'm not someone who's like really fixated on the idea of like, I need to have a certain kind of family and a certain number of children and live in a certain place. It wasn't even like that. It was just sort of like, what even is going to become of my life? Like if I'm gay, like I had no image. I had no like, sort of stable, joyful image to like latch onto and, you know, be like, okay, well, that's what I'm moving towards. It took time to develop that.
Yeah. And maybe my reflection here is more of a difference in age thing or something, because when I reconciled my own gayness, my queerness, it was like, oh, okay, well, marriage is not going to be an option. So I'm going to need to put that in a box and forget about that. So just interesting that that was still conceived of as something that could happen, I suppose.
Yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Maybe it was like, because that was just sort of the heteronormative idea of like getting married. And like, that's what a sort of final stage of your life can look like. That then when I was able to attach gayness to it in a way that felt comfortable, I was like, oh, okay, I can still have the life that I think I'm supposed to have and also be gay. And that made me feel more comfortable.
And so conversations with others then, what was your first coming out?
It was actually to a friend of mine who I had met at a summer camp, and she was older, and she was Slovakian. Her name was Lucia. And
is she still Slovakian?
She's still Slovakian to this day, to this very day. Somehow she's remained Slovakian. And she was just a really sweet and supportive friend that I met when I was like 13. And we stayed in touch. And then I went and visited her in Vienna. And I knew she was really close with a gay man. She, like, her best friend was gay. And she talked about that relationship a lot. And I think it was because I was like, whatever, like 15. And in this foreign country with nobody else that I knew around me, nobody else from my home life, that I felt comfortable telling her. And I just remember, you know, lying in her like studio apartment in my bed, and we were just chatting as we were falling asleep. And I told her, and it was like really, I don't know, it was really intense. But she was really kind about it and, you know, was not super shocked and really normalized it in a way that made me feel a lot better. And it's funny because we didn't maintain a friendship much after that. She came to visit me one time in the States, and we were always friendly. I don't think anything about my coming out to her changed our relationship, but it was more just, it's just funny to me that such an important moment in my own life happened with someone whose friendship really just was from that one specific period in my life. And we don't really have a relationship to this day, but she really was there and supportive for me in a very important turning point.
Mm. But it's safer as well, isn't it? Safer to have that conversation with someone who, if they did reject you, it would be like, okay, well, I'm getting on a plane. See ya. Like,
yeah, I think that was part of it.
You described it as intense.
Mm.
Why was it intense?
I think it's because I had spent so much time with these thoughts in private and done so much to cover it up. And been so scared about people finding out and how that would change things, that to then just say the words out loud, I mean, it was really cathartic and also totally novel. I mean, I had never had a conversation like that with anybody before. I mean, that was just a part of me that was like just for me, and to then bring it out into the world and hear somebody else's feelings on it, it was just really, you know, it's like jumping into cold water. It's just like, it's a shock to the system. Mm.
But just like jumping into cold water, after a while, your body gets you. I don't know what I'm going with this. Exactly.
No, it's true. But
let's just see. Let's true. Just see. Your body gets used to it, and then it becomes your new normal, maybe?
Yes, right. You adjust. And then you, yeah. And then the more you do it, the more it feels like you're jumping into warm water.
Yeah. Or the more you do it, the more you realize that you're not actually doing yourself any favors by standing shin deep in the water, hoping that somehow it'll get better.
Totally.
You just
totally.
Have to dive in. Yeah.
Yes. You found the metaphor. That's it. Yeah.
So with that in mind, getting back on the plane, going back home, were you then like, hey, everyone, I'm a gay?
No, I was not quite ready for that. I didn't announce that at the airport when I saw my parents. Aww. That was that first experience was like a good, it was like a confidence boost that I could even do it and also be received kindly. And so then it really just became a process of coming out to my friends first, like one after the other. I would call them on the phone. And I just did a series of these phone calls, and it must have been like 6 or 7 of them.
What did you do, like one a day, or did you just like bang it out in one go?
It kind of felt like that. It felt like one a weekend or something. Like once I got into a groove of it, I was like, all right, I'm just off to the races now. And
did you have like a fancy list as well that you crossed that names off
great.
Of when you got there? Oh, that would have been so
if I had had a list. It was really, the list was just my own internal feeling of like my best friends at the time. And it was like, these are the people that I can trust, because I didn't want to come out in a way where it's like everybody would know. And when I talked to them about it, I definitely made it clear that I was like, this is for you to know. This is not for you to tell other people. So I was never actually out to my whole high school while I was still in high school. It was just like a couple people knew this. And honestly, looking back on it, I really appreciate them keeping it in confidence and not telling people. I mean, you know, it's like we were like 16 and 17 year olds. Like, what could be like a juicier piece of information than knowing that someone else is gay? And to the fact that they never told or made a big deal out of it was very helpful to me, because I was not ready to face the entire grade being out. I mean, I'm sure if I had been outed, I would have dealt with it like many people do.
Yeah.
You know, you have no choice but to rise to the occasion. But at that time, I didn't feel ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you want to face the wrath of a bunch of teenagers?
Yeah, exactly.
Did at any point after high school and years after this happened, did those friends ever compare notes to see who you came out to first and therefore who was most important to you?
Yeah, there was definitely some of them who got a little salty about the order in which they found out.
Oh, I would, yeah.
Yeah, jokingly, yeah. But yeah, they definitely brought that up. They were like, I don't know why I was the last call, but okay.
This is why group text messages are so, so useful.
Totally, totally equalizer.
And you can send emojis as well. Then you, yeah. You can't really do that when you're talking to someone.
I can send a little pride flag.
Yeah. And okay, so you came out to friends before you came out to your parents? I'm assuming you've come out to your parents.
Yeah, well, then I came out to my brother. Yeah, then I came out to my brother next, and he was really great about it. He was just so sweet and so understanding. Just very immediately supportive. That was also a phone call. And then once I did that, it was really getting close to, that must have been like shortly before the summer after senior year. So I was getting ready to go off to college. And so I was like, all right, I'm running out of time. And for some reason, I just had it so kind of divided in my mind where it was like, I really need to come out to my parents before college because I just need to sort of like, that felt like a rite of passage for leaving home, going to college, because I also knew in my mind, I was like, once I get to college, I'll start doing gay things. I'll start going out on dates with guys, all of this stuff. Cause like, it'll all be available to me all of a sudden, which is funny because it actually already was available to me. Like I was, well, I mean, it's, of course it's like available because, you know, there's other gay people around, but I wasn't meeting them or we weren't connecting. And so I wasn't forming either gay, like romantic relationships or gay friendships really in high school, even though later I found out that a lot of friends of mine from that time actually were gay or queer in some way. It wasn't so much like a bonding over that at that time. But I knew that that was going to be a bigger part of my life in college. And I just wanted to just come out with it, you know, and just sort of rip off the Band-Aid. And so I remember having lunch with my dad and just sort of knowing when we were driving to lunch, I was like, all right, I think it's just going to be today. I think I'm just going to do it today. Cause it was just us having lunch. And it was funny cause I just really was not planning it for that long. But once like the idea settled in my mind and I was like, okay, I could do it today and I could actually see myself following through with it. It was kind of exciting because it was like, okay, finally, like we can just get this ball rolling. And yeah, we sat down and we ordered pizza and we were sitting there and yeah, I just told him, you know, there's something I want to talk to you about. And I told him and he was so sweet because my dad is an English professor and is really into musicals and Shakespeare. So there was always a running joke in our family that my dad is actually gay. And so when I came out to my dad, he jokingly took my hand, he kissed my hand and he said, me too. And it was just a great moment of like both just really feeling his love, but then also him just totally cutting the tension. And he was so loving about it and really curious and wanted to know more about what I had gone through. And I think immediately was just very empathic and concerned about the pain that I had gone through. And I think that he and my mom had wondered about why I was so quiet around romantic things. And I think it was something that especially made my mom anxious. So I think that he was really just wanted to know more and really like gave me a ton of time and space to just talk about it and sort of just reveal what the last couple years of my life had been like internally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I told my mom, I think like 2 days later with my dad there, and she was immediately supportive about it, but she went through a tougher time. I think there was part of her that sort of shut down in the days following that, because I think that she was really struggling with having the image that she had of the life that I was going to live and how she would be involved in it just totally changed and thrown. Because I think that she had been preparing herself for a daughter-in-law and, you know, I guess like a more like heteronormative family with children. And so she felt thrown. And it was like this feeling of like, well, I don't know how I'm going to be involved in Corey's life. I don't know if Corey will want me in his life. I'm worried Corey will have a more tragic life. And there was all this stuff that came up for her that she wasn't really talking to me about at the time. But I could see it was almost like she fell into a short depression. And it lasted for maybe like a week or two. I just wasn't really connecting with her. I just felt like there was like a coldness. But much to her credit, she gradually came out of that. And with also to the credit of my brother and my dad, because they encouraged her to think about it in new ways and realize that this was a different era where my life wasn't necessarily going to be as difficult as the gay people she had known growing up in, you know, the 70s and the 80s. And that she would still be involved in my life, that I would still have a lot of the same experiences that I was going to have, you know, if I was straight, and that I could still have a family and a partner. And I think that once she sort of came out of that place, she just became totally supportive and really lovely about it and really invested in, you know, my finding like romantic happiness.
Mm. But really interesting that reflection that you gave, that she was worried that there would be no place for her in your life.
Yes. She sort of assumed that I was going to just reject her and be like, I'm gay, but you know, like, you don't understand me. You'll never understand me. I don't want you in my life. Even though my mom and I were really close. Like, my mom unfortunately passed away 5 years ago. So that's why I'm talking about it in the past tense like this. But like, I'm even saying that now, I'm like very glad we got to go through this whole experience together. You know, it's just such an important part of who I am. And I'm so glad that she knew about that and had time to really understand it and learn more about it and show me love for that side of myself. And yeah, I think she just, you know, she assumed something that just wasn't true. And it was helpful once she told me that, because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I want you in my life more than ever. Like, you have nothing to worry about. And so she just needed some time to internalize that.
Yeah, and just adjust and figure it out. Yeah. I want to pick up on a few things that you said throughout this conversation. The first is around using the telephone. So up until your parents, it seems as though you came out to everyone over the telephone.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a tactical move?
Oh my God, completely. I mean, it felt so much safer to not have to make eye contact and just sit in a silent room with somebody and then do something after. You know, like, the telephone call is so bookended. It's just like, I'll make a call. I'll say like, hey, I want to talk to you about something. We talk about it and we hang up and we leave. And I think that being alone, being able to be in my own home or a park near my house or something, like, and just totally feel that solitude was really important as like a wading into the waters. You know, so much of the fear is like around those initial first moments of like, how am I going to say the words I'm gay? Or how am I going to change from a really casual topic to like, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Like, there's something so loaded about that. And it's like, I'm still scared of that stuff to this day. When you sort of are like, even someone you're very close to, like, you're like, hey, we need to talk about something. Or like, hey, it's time to like, let's take a moment to like talk about something real for a second. Like, it's just very,
let's get deep, man.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very vulnerable. And so I struggled with that, and being on the phone made it a little bit easier, because you don't, you know, you're just taking out all body language and eye contact.
So is that your tip for listeners to this show? If they have a difficult conversation that they need to embark on, ring the person.
I mean, if the being in person thing is really tripping you up, I would recommend a phone call. I mean, the dynamic of a phone call didn't stop the moment from being in my mind, any less sort of tender or cathartic. But I can imagine for some people, physical touch, like getting a hug from the person they're telling, or, you know, even just like looking into that person's eyes would be really important. So obviously a phone call isn't the only way. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, people also talk about like coming out to someone while you're in the car and you're both facing forward is like a helpful thing, because it's just like the intensity of eye contact can make things especially difficult. And also there's something to focus on, like the road ahead gives you both, it's sort of like a little out It's like a little something to take the edge off of what could just be an overwhelmingly intimate moment.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend the car thing myself because if a good song comes on the radio in the middle of that deep and meaningful, you're going to get distracted.
Totally. You might bust out a move.
Yeah. You might be like, yeah, shut up. I want to sing along.
Totally. Hey, and if that's your truth, then you need to express that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the best way of having an intense conversation is because I get that you can't just like meet up with someone in a cafe or whatever and then from the off be like, right, I need to talk to you about this thing. You need to warm up to it. But sometimes in the warming up, you don't kind of get to the point where you can naturally segue. So yeah, I maybe just dive into it. Maybe send them a text message like 2 hours beforehand and say, we really need to talk, ... So then they're like ready.
We really need to talk about something very important. Yeah. I mean, if you want to sort of front load it with that much drama.
Yeah. I think that's the only way. And then whatever you tell them is not going to be as big as the thing that they have anticipated in their mind. So they'll just be like, yeah, why? Like, who cares? Why are you telling me this? What's the real story? Yeah, this is the technique. This is the way forward. Right. Okay. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and I think I wrote this down, but I don't know if it's a word for word recapturing of what you said. I knew that it was going to be a bigger part of my life when I went to college.
Yeah.
And this is in reference to the gay thing. The gay thing. I don't know why I said that. The gay thing. I mean, the way that you've worded that makes it sound like, oh, it's just going to accidentally happen. Of course it's going to happen when I go to college. I'm going to be exposed to this. But was it really that you were compartmentalizing, saying, I'm not going to figure any of this shit out for now. I'm going to put it off until I go to college. This is me totally like projecting.
A lot of the internals. No. Yeah, totally. It's a really good question. I mean, the internal stuff I was all just naturally working through in high school and of course continued to in college. But I think more specifically what I'm talking about is like really pursuing other men that I know are gay. For some reason, I had a block about that in, you know, because I turned 18 right before senior year of high school and I was always interested in older men. But I knew that, you know, because when I was a minor, I knew that that was fully off limits to me. But then for some reason, I just didn't like, even when I turned 18 and I had another full year of living at home in high school, even though I know plenty of friends of mine who took advantage of that time in their life and started to go out and meet guys and use apps and all that stuff, like it was just delayed for me. And I think that part of it was like this feeling of like, that's going to be the more adult part of my life. Like that's when I need to be fully independent. Like I couldn't picture meeting up with a guy off the internet or taking a guy back to my house, especially when I wasn't out to my parents yet, because I only came out to them at the very end of senior year. So it was like, it was always something where I was like, okay, that will start when I get to college. And this was also a time where it's just, I feel like the apps were just catching on. I mean, especially with like younger people, because I think that at that time, like in 2011, 2012, the idea of online dating, I think, was still sort of regarded as creepy.
I mean, it is creepy.
It can be creepy. But it was this idea of like, what? You like date people online? That's something only just like someone in their 60s does or something. And so it was like something that a lot of kids like would write off. And also it was this feeling of like, it feels dangerous. And I feel too young to be dealing with that. But then my brother told me about Grindr because he had read about it. Because of that thing that happened with like the Olympics, where I think like Grindr like crashed because there was so much activity around the Olympics. And he was like, you should get on one of those apps. And so I looked into them and I was like, oh my God. And it was like discovering this whole world. And there's like a bear version of Grindr called Growler.
Wait. So how did this conversation with your brother go? Like, I think what you need in your life is more pictures of people's buttholes. You should download this app.
He knew of Grindr. I mean, because he was already older, he was in college, and I'm sure that he knew some friends also maybe that were using it. And so he just told me about it. And I think that in sort of a playful way, but also in a real way, he was like, you should try that. And, you know, he didn't know about any of the insanity that goes on there.
He knew.
But maybe he did. Either way, he led me in a good direction because I later that night, probably, I downloaded Growler, the bear one. And it was sort of like off to the races from there. And then when I got to college, it was just like, just being let loose. Like within days of being dropped off there, I was going out on dates with guys.
Aww, magic.
I was ready for
it. That's super interesting though, that you were like, oh, I'm not ready for this when you were 18.
I know. I didn't
even like.
Who has
that level of maturity at 18?
I don't even know. I definitely don't look on it as maturity. I look at it as sort of like a goody two shoes thing, which is like, I'm still at home. I'm still a good boy. I'm still also still closeted. So like, there was just a lot that.
That's where it's more fun to sneak around.
I was not that kid. I mean, I definitely did stupid stuff with my friends in high school, but I was not like a. So much like a sneaking around type of kid. Like I wasn't super attracted to like risk. And to me, meeting a guy online, especially in the year 2012, felt like something that was like so risky. But I don't, like you're saying, there's also like a weird logic to it because it was like, once I actually dipped my toe in that pool, when I started to use the apps and stuff, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Because I could, for the first time in my life, talk to guys that I thought were attractive, that were attracted to me. We could express that to each other. Like that was massive. And that, and once that happened, it was just like, you know, it was all out the window. I was just ready to go.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it? Once you get that first bite, it's like, I need more.
Intoxicating.
So let's talk about college.
Cool.
You moved to the other side of the country to go to college?
Yeah. Yeah. From New York to LA.
What was that like?
I loved it. I mean, I know that this, like, a lot of people's freshman year is their worst year of college. But weirdly, it was, for me, one of the best. Because, like I said, I was just, like, I was so excited and, like, sort of ready to take on new things. Particularly around being gay and meeting guys and going to bars and just, like, experiencing that part of my life. Which had sort of, it felt like it was something that was really frustrated and on pause during my high school years. And so there was a real excitement around that. And then also, you know, I was going to film school and I'd always loved to make movies. And so I was also for the first time, not just actually surrounding myself with other gay people, but also other film people.
And what's the Venn diagram there?
Yeah, there's totally one. I think for me, it was just thrilling enough to be around other people who really wanted to make movies. It was such a fun feeling of just like other people who were as obsessed as I was, and just this is what they wanted to do on the weekends and the kind of stuff they wanted to talk about. It was just like a really exhilarating year of trying a bunch of new stuff and just and feeling very, very free. That was just massive.
So talk me through those first few weeks. So you land in LAX, you put Grindr on immediately, you
Growler.
Find someone to hook up with. Oh, Growler, sorry. Growler. You fire up Growler. Find someone to hook up with immediately. Is that how it went? Or
I found a guy, like, well, several guys to go out on dates with. And, you know, we did that whole thing of just like, yeah, we would go out to get dinner together and just talk. And it, you know, it felt like a proper date. And it was just a really nice feeling. It was really overwhelming because I had been picturing guys like this for so long and they had felt so out of reach for me. And then to be sitting across from one and a guy that I was really attracted to and that I knew was attracted to me and that we could be having this sort of flirtatious conversation, it was such a high. I was just like almost like in this mental loop of like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I like rode that feeling for a while.
Did that mean you were really terrible at conversation on that date?
I might have been. I know the first guy, when I met up with him, he was like, within minutes, he was like, you don't have to be so nervous. It's okay. Like, everything's okay. Aww. So I must have very obviously been nervous.
Aww. Wouldn't it be wonderful to feel that kind of nervousness again?
You feel very alive.
I agree.
I've definitely been thinking about that time in my life a lot, especially as I'm working on a new script, just like that exhilaration of like those first few times. It's just like, it just feels so front-loaded with so, I mean, I think it probably is like this for everybody to a certain extent, but I think particularly when you're queer, you do so much sort of solitary imagining before anything happens. And so much of it is in your head and in your totally internal private life. And then all of a sudden when it becomes real, it's sort of mind-blowing and overwhelming and thrilling. And it's like, it's just
and also underwhelming. Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, that can happen too.
Like, this is it?
Right, right. This thing that I thought was going to be so great is actually just kind of normal or mediocre.
Sorry, I just brought us down to, I don't know.
No, that's real too.
Like, let me point out the gray cloud on the silver lining. But the thing is, like, when you get to a certain age, like, there's not really that many new things to do anymore. So, like, there's not really anything where you get that first wave of, like, fuck, I don't know what to do. I can't regulate my emotions, which is a wonderful thing about that point in your life when you're still trying on adulthood.
Yeah. It's like life feeds you that stuff at that age. And I think that it's still possible to access those feelings. You just really have to go out of your way to purposefully introduce yourself to new situations. Mm. Like, I just went on my first ever meditation retreat last weekend, and that was like a very, very new thing for me. And at times it did have that feeling of like, wow, like just the thrill of something so novel. But I had to push myself to get into that situation in the first place, as opposed to just like, oh, it's just like these natural rites of passage that you don't even have to try really to make that, they'll just happen to you a lot of the time.
Yeah. But like on top of that, there's also, you know, the more things that you do, the new things that you do,
yeah,
you start to learn that the nerves that you have beforehand or the anticipatory feelings,
right,
are not that big a deal. So you totally don't get as overwhelmed by new things, even if you are trying new things. I've said new things a lot.
No, that makes sense.
In this sentence.
Yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying.
Okay, so you went on dates, you flirted, you came across as nervous, you were talked off the ledge by people that you were on dates with. Where does Fault Line come into this?
Well, Fault Line was, that was my first date. That, like, we went to dinner and then he showed me Fault Line.
Aww.
And it was really sweet. Yeah, I mean, it was the first time I had ever stepped foot in a gay bar. And it was a...
Oh, hang on. So is this the guy that told you you're really nervous?
Yes, exactly.
Aww. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Carry on.
No, please. And I don't know if I knew about this exact gay bar, but like before I got to college, I like looked up the gay bars in the neighborhood and I knew that there were some close by. And it was a really nice feeling of seeing it. I mean, it was like, it must have been like a Wednesday or a Thursday night because it was not very crowded at all. But he was clearly a regular there. He knew like a bartender and he just sort of walked me around the bar and I just sort of got a lay of the land. And, you know, it was like a bare like leather bar. And so it had sort of like a darker, sort of mustier vibe. And I liked it. I mean, I thought it was
Wait,
cool.
Hang on. What is a mustier vibe? Unpack that for me.
Like a little bit more...
smelly?
Not smelly, but like like a little bit more edgy and atmospheric. You know what I mean? Like there was probably either some like real like simple techno playing or like hard rock. Just sort of like something that felt like you're walking into like a biker bar or something like a dive bar, which, you know, it made it especially thrilling and also intimidating as, you know, mm-hmm. you know, a freshman in college. Yeah. And then we were not there for long, but I just remember like we sat down on there was like a stage that they had in their patio area. And we sat down there and we were chatting and I think I just said, I really want to kiss you or yeah, something along those lines. And then I did.
Wait, and so you made the move?
I had to make the move.
That takes a lot of bravery.
Thanks. It definitely felt like...
Or maybe just yeah. There was just lots of hormones in action.
There was definitely a lot of hormones. And I also just sort of had a feeling of like, I can't leave this date and not kiss this guy or at least try because... I was really, really attracted to him.
And so you asked him, and then what did he say?
I feel like then he might have said something like, well, then you should, or then something like that. I wish I could remember.
And then he made you do all the work.
He didn't. He just like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess he made it a sort of a trial by fire situation where I had to initiate it.
Terrifying.
I think it wasn't so scary because I already knew, like, if I know that the other person is attracted to me, then it throws a lot of the nerves out the window because then it's like, well, I know we're both interested in this. And so it's just a matter of time before somebody makes a move. It's way more intimidating to me to even approach or even let alone flirt with someone if I don't already have a sense that they're interested in me. I really admire people who can go up to other people on the street, or obviously, you know, there's a creepy version of this, but I also think that there's like a version of this where it's like, there's sort of a fearlessness of going up to someone and just shooting your shot and introducing yourself and trying to make conversation regardless of whether or not you know you're that person's type, you know? And then if you see that they're not interested in it, you let it go. But there's also a chance they might be. And so I admire people that are sort of willing to go in blind.
Yeah, I think that's super brave. But crucially, they also need to have the ability to walk away. Otherwise, ugh.
Yes, you have to read the room. And you have to know what times and places are appropriate to do that.
Yes. I'll never try it at a funeral again.
You learned your lesson the hard way.
Yeah. Several times.
Yeah.
So this kiss, let's go back to the beginning of the conversation. His beard felt nice, or his bristles felt nice.
His bristles, yeah, yeah. His follicles.
So tell us about it.
You know, I was always really attracted to that specific kind of masculinity, like a big guy with a beard who just felt very like bearish and manly. And that was something that I wanted for myself too. I like wanted to project that image. And it was also the kind of guy that I wanted to be with, who I imagined being really comforting to be with. And so then to like actually like make contact with a guy who had that sort of build and that energy was like really thrilling, because it felt like finally making contact with something I had wanted for a very, very long time and really had like idealized like to the max. And it felt like I was making contact with an ideal. And of course, there's pitfalls to that too, because once you break contact with that ideal, it can feel devastating and then you're craving it more and more. But I will say that was a moment where it was like, you know, the heavens opened up. The choir was singing.
What were they singing?
This beard feels really nice.
I don't know that one.
It's sort of obscure.
Yeah. And then what happened with that guy afterwards?
It's sort of the kind of thing I'm describing, where it was like I wanted to see him again, and I think that he wasn't that interested for one reason or another. I think that, honestly, I probably overwhelmed him with my enthusiasm. Like, just from kissing alone, I think I was like very, very forward with telling him about how excited I was and like how happy I was to be with him and how handsome I thought he was. And I think that I guess I love bombed him. It was just like too exciting. And I could imagine for him, he was older, he probably felt like, you know, it's nice that this young person is like experiencing his first kiss, but like maybe it felt immature or juvenile to him. I'll never know. But I definitely did follow up and like try to see him again. And it never really worked out. And so that was a funny situation, sort of similar to the one that I had with Lucia, who I was telling about, my friend, my Slovakian friend, where it was like, had that important turning moment with that person and then didn't really ever see them again. Like they sort of just faded away from my life.
So if he was here, what would you say to him?
I think I would say, thank you for taking good care of me that night, you know, and for making that first experience a pleasant one, and for sort of recognizing where I was at in my life and recognizing the fact that I was nervous and making an effort to make me feel better, and for showing me my first gay bar and giving me my first kiss, and in a way that felt like a good stepping stone. Like, he wasn't pushy. He didn't throw more at me than I could handle in that moment. I think he just recognized where I was at, and I would just thank him for being sensitive and kind that night.
And whilst we're giving messages to people from that night, if you could have a conversation with yourself from that night, so the nervous wreck just before he was about to go into that date that would then lead to Faultline, what advice would you give him? And again, I will accept non-word responses like,
if that's yeah. No, it's really a great question. I never thought about it like that. Maybe don't try to be older than you are in that moment. Because I think that there was part of me that, especially since I was going out to see an older guy, I was really eager to impress and show him that I wasn't just some dumb kid, you know, that I was like wise beyond my years and that I was sophisticated. And I think that with that came an anxiety to just impress him and to present myself in as good of a light as I could possibly do. And so I think that that was an early lesson in sort of going into dates with an aim of impressing the person that I think in some ways is something I, you know, of course everybody wants to present a good version of themselves on dates, but it's one thing to sort of like show up and be present and kind with the other person, but it's another to like sort of put on a show for them. And I think that, I don't know, I think I would have just been like, it's totally okay to be exactly where you're at in your life and as old as you are, and you don't need to impress him or come off as anything more special, you know, than you are. And just relax, because there will be more opportunities and you'll get older and you don't have to rush things.
Do you still feel that urge?
Yeah. Sometimes when I go into dates and stuff, like I feel like I should put on a show. Like sometimes I lean too much into a sort of performativity. And I think it would be better to be a little bit more vulnerable and be able to rest in some of the awkwardness and stiltedness of the thing. Because I think now it's better to do that than to do too much of a song and dance that will ultimately just make you feel more alienated from the other person.
Yeah. I think I've gone like too far the other way though. I'm a bit like, this is who I am. Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ramp up all the things about me that are annoying just so you know what you're getting yourself in for.
Totally.
And if you don't like it, that's cool. Off you go. But if you do, then maybe I'll chill out a bit.
That's so funny.
But I should just be chill.
Yeah. You want to leave like a little bit for them to uncover later.
And this is the problem when you go in with that I'm really like normal and fine and brilliant and blah, that they like that version of you, and then when you let your guard down they're like, oh, who is this weirdo? I don't know, I'm not interested in this. And then they skedaddle. So it would be better if they just skedaddled earlier.
Well, then you're sorting out the real ones from the non-real ones, like, because the real ones should, if they really like you, they should be like, okay, this is a part of Kay that is a challenge, but we're going to work through it, versus someone who's like runs for the hills.
Because I didn't say it was a challenge to be my friend.
Oh, no, okay. Maybe more of a surprise, a diamond in the rough. I'm not sure.
Wonderful interruption. Yeah, I don't know. But I do think that you do need to be yourself, because then, like, there's no point in attracting people that actually aren't that interested.
But, totally.
Yeah, you do have to be tactical in what you expose and what you don't expose.
Yeah. I feel like that only comes with practice. Like, it's impossible to plan for that kind of thing. You just feel out. And also, like, I do genuinely think with the right person, where you naturally click with that person, you just naturally, almost like without thinking about it, sort of calibrate to that dynamic and reveal the correct amount of stuff. Like,
were you about to say erect?
I almost said erect. I didn't mean to. you just, you're honest with that person in a way that is appropriate. I've definitely felt that on first dates where I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm like, this person is giving me room and inviting me to be honest about myself, but also it doesn't have that manic feeling of like a first date where it's like, let's pour out our hearts and souls to each other at this wine bar, you know, like, cause sometimes it can just, it's like too much too fast. And it's like, even though you're technically getting so deep and real and bonding with each other, I've had experiences where it's just like when the stuff that's so deeply personal comes out so quickly, it can actually feel more alienating in a weird way, because it's like, you haven't built up the trust or connection to give that information a place to land.
And performative in its own way, right?
Totally.
Meeting new people is weird. One of the other things I was going to ask before, and then the conversation went in a different direction, was how did it feel, you know, given everything that you said about moving to LA, being around bearish men for the first time, how did it feel to be in a whole room full of them?
That was like, it was like, so exciting and so overwhelming. like being like a kid in a candy store in a certain way, and then also feeling really, I mean, this like almost like decision anxiety, because there were so many different guys that I would see that I wanted to talk to that I wouldn't know where to begin or who to start with. And would also immediately feel really intimidated because, you know, it's a room full of guys that I'm really attracted to. So it feels very like high risk because I'm really invested in them liking me back. And like, I really want to make a connection with somebody. And so it would feel almost like overstimulating in a certain way. And I think that because this was like such a pocket, it's like a subculture within a subculture. It's like to actually just be in a room full of guys that are like this, that you're attracted to and that you know are also gay. It just feels like such a precious kind of moment because so much time is just spent out in the straight world. And to actually be in that room and be like, oh, wow, I really need to take advantage of this. I think at that time in my life, sometimes I just felt a lot of the pressure to be like, I got to meet every guy here. And looking back on it, I wish I had felt like a little calmer, like not putting so much pressure on myself and just like relaxing more. And also meeting guys more as like, I feel like this took time to get better at, but meeting guys more on a friend basis to begin with, as opposed to just looking at it as a place for, you know, hooking up.
Mm-mm. Or worse, looking for your future husband.
Sure, sure. That can be dangerous.
That's very dangerous. Do you have any memories of Fault Line or maybe clubbing from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, why not get in touch? Because I'd love to hear from you and I'd love to find out about your stories. Go to lostspacespodcast.com and find the section Share a Lost Space. And then tell me what you got up to and help me to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing. I'm relying on you. But if that's all a bit too much and you just want to reach out and say, hey, why not find me on Facebook or Instagram where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Corey by visiting his website, coreyshermanfilms.com. And you can also find him on X where his profile is at coresherm. Corsham. Just look in the show notes for this episode, you'll find it there. And he has also just released a new film called Big Boys, which is a queer coming-of-age film about a teenage boy's unexpected crush. But on who? You will need to go to the website bigboysfilm.com to find out more, and I promise you, you will not be disappointed. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you subscribed, left a review on your podcast platform of choice, or just told other people who you think might be interested in giving it a wee listen too. My name's Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.